ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Pop Culture Ninja. I'm Nathan here with Nathan. Nathan, what's going on, dude?
We're in the holidays. We're coming up on Christmas.
We are, yeah.
We're in the holiday season, December.
Yeah, we did our Thanksgiving episode a couple weeks ago. Nice to kind of talk about some of our traditions and, you know, some things that we enjoy doing with family and all that. So today we are here talking about Christmas. More specifically, dedicating some time to talking about Christmas episodes that we really enjoy from television and then Christmas TV specials and things like that. But before we get into that, real quick, just wanted to announce that we're going to be doing a bunch of giveaways this holiday season. So we want to just make sure that people are up and aware of what's going on. So be following us on Twitter and Facebook because those announcements are going to be put out there. Nathan, if I'm correct, you're going to put the announcements on Twitter, and because our Twitter is linked to Facebook, those will cross right over and connect with one another.
Yes, so we'll have information out there. We're also kind of gearing up here for our end of the year show. We'll have the Pop Culture Ninja end of the year. We've been going now since May. We're getting close to I don't know if we're going to make 40 episodes before the new year, but we're headed in that direction. And it's been really fun so far. But we're going to have a best of the year episode. We're going to talk about, you know, some of our favorite movies, some of the most memorable pop culture events that we've had. We will steer clear of politics.
Yes.
But what I'm going to do, too, is on Facebook starting next week, we're going to put up a place where you can post your favorite movies, favorite TV shows, your top tens, if you will, or your top fives or your top threes, whatever you happen to have. And if we're going to have you send them to us via email. You can post them on Facebook. If you can manage them in 140 characters, you can even put them on Twitter. Everyone that's entered in, we'll put them in. We'll have a very specific prize, probably a couple of them, that we'll mention as we get closer to that. So stay tuned for that. That'll be going up next week.
Awesome. So really excited about what the season has to bring. And with that, Nathan, let's dive right in because you and I have our top 10 TV episode Christmas special list.
Yes, and it's kind of funny because this really spawned off of a conversation we had on These Go to 11 that no one's heard yet.
Correct.
So this is one of those timey-wimey sorts of things where by the time you hear the These Go to 11 episode later, you'll realize where the inspiration for this came because we end up going over favorite Christmas movies again.
Yes.
We did one last year when I came on as a guest to These Go to 11. We do kind of the second part of that. And we were discussing the ability to talk about TV shows because I think for me, Christmas, watching things at Christmas time largely happened on television. Particularly I was growing up until I was about 10 or 11. And maybe this is what I end up doing now as I make up for lost time. But between the time growing up, you know, between about 4 and 14, I didn't really go to the movies much. I probably can count on number of times on my hand that I went to the movies. Like, we saw Jurassic Park, Return of the Jedi, Wayne's World, you know, all the classics. And honestly, minus a couple others, that was just about it. So most of everything I saw on television. So, of course, exposure to movies like A Christmas Story, It's a Wonderful Life, all that happened on TV. And, of course, most of my memories then are really kind of tied in with TV episodes. And of course there's the Christmas specials, things like Rudolph and Frosty, and if you're more esoteric, you know, the Claymation Christmas or the and Adventures of Santa Claus, which we mentioned last time on These Go to 11. But what I thought would be interesting is there's been such a wealth of Christmas specials with TV shows, existing TV shows, that you get to the holidays and it's time to do a Thanksgiving special.
Yes.
There's probably very few Thanksgiving specials, but or let's do a Halloween episode, or let's do a Christmas episode. And a lot of what I associate in terms of media with that kind of Christmassy feeling probably comes from what was cultivated in the Christmas episodes.
Yes.
And that's it's kind of cool because essentially what you get is all your favorite characters celebrating this holiday in different ways. And so to me that's kind of compelling because surprisingly there are some really good ones out there, at least to me. I'm going to be up front. My top 10 is not the top 10 you're probably going to, the definitive top 10 you're going to find on a list somewhere because they're very specific to me. I realize that two things. My tendencies, I already knew this, drift very much towards fantasy and science fiction more than your. I've seen most of the Christmas specials across the gamut, but a lot of what ended up on my list are within science fiction, fantasy, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then also that I have a really dark penchant when it comes to Christmas. I definitely have that kind of bah humbug going on a little bit. Although, when I look at this list and when I think about what I like in a Christmas episode, is that sort of feeling of uplift, that sort of warm fuzzies that people, I assume, associate with Hallmark movies and,
yes,
and the like.
Yes.
But they're just found in these rather dark things. So I don't know about your top 10. My top 10 certainly looks, it's probably a little different, probably a little dark, but I have warm feelings for all of these episodes.
Yeah, and I think that's fair enough. I think it's fair to say that mine aren't dark. I think they're more of the traditional shows. And what's interesting about my list, Nathan, is that I've broken mine down between individual episodes where out of maybe 10 seasons, there was one Christmas episode that I thought was great and just jumped out at me as something that I will always remember for whatever reason. But then I've also got one where if it was a shorter season, and I'll talk about that in a moment, but if it was a shorter season, in that time, every single Christmas episode they did was just spot on for me. And so, you know, I'll get to that as my list progresses, but, you know, there are just those that, you know, maybe it was four seasons or five seasons and they did a Christmas episode each season. And to me, they hit it in each and every one. It just, you know, it jerked the heartstrings for whatever reason. And just, you know, the memories come flooding back to me of that particular show.
Oh, I totally hear you. And there's a couple on my list where I've mentioned a couple because some of these shows, they got on a good roll.
Yep.
They hit an episode, particularly maybe a Christmas episode, and thought, hey, how are we going to do this again next year? How are we going to top what we did?
Yes.
There's a specific title that comes to mind, but since it's very near the top of my list, we'll get to that. Let's start with some runners-up.
Yeah.
Outside the top 10. You want to name some runners-up on your list, Nathan?
Yeah. So for me, some of the ones would be like, you know, Angel and Buffy, when they were doing their Christmas episodes. Those are runners up that I enjoyed them. They were fun. They were good, but they weren't anything that like really stood out to me. And again, because of the oddity of where they were, I enjoyed them, but it wasn't something that I flowed into and really stuck with. What about you?
We'll get back to Buffy and Angel. For me, some runners up that just didn't quite make the top 10, but I still think are great episodes of television. And there's a lot. Even if you go kind of further back, even a show like Father Knows Best, mm-hmm, like in the 50s, it had an episode, and I didn't even remember the actual name of it. But it's funny because now when we look back at the 50s and we think about, oh, back when everyone had Christmas right, and now it's all about consumerism. But this episode of A Father Knows Best is specifically about the main character dealing with the fact that his family is caught up in gift giving and trying, mm-hmm, to make sure that they give gifts for everybody who's already given them gifts. And it's almost like a proto Clark Griswold, except where instead of Clark Griswold being the kind of creepy antithesis,
right,
of Father Knows Best, he's taking his family out to cut down a tree. They get stuck out in the woods, and then they end up meeting this old, kindly man with a white beard who, you know, no, I'm not going to give away who he is, but I'm sure you can figure it out. But the way they handle it, even though it's very straightforward, even though it's very 1950s, it's very interesting in the way that they're dealing with the feeling of consumerism kind of leeching out the joy of Christmas. It's funny because I was just reading my kids before we started this, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the actual Dr. Seuss book.
Yep.
And I love the short cartoon. I'm not a big fan of the Jim Carrey movie,
mm-hmm,
but both of those have moved just ever so slightly. It's funny how the original story is very much about a character who seems to be hating the consumer concept of Christmas, mm-hmm, without thinking about the heart behind it. And so it's interesting to see that pop up in works that are much older when we kind of think back to the time, oh, that's back when they knew how to handle Christmas.
Right,
but
right,
we still had Macy's, you know, we still had department stores and all that kind of stuff. Other episodes that just didn't quite make the list, The Office. The Office had some of the funniest, mm-hmm, Christmas episodes that I can remember. And it captures a different area of life that you don't think about a lot with Christmas, which is dealing with those holiday parties. And of course,
yeah,
The Office dealt with the fact, well, not everyone celebrates Christmas, or characters who are just so caught up in their own nonsense. There was one episode where they go to Benihana, and it's just ridiculous. So there was a couple of good episodes there. And, of course, the whole Michael Scott character, the way he deals with that. And, of course, the BBC, when they did their final episode of their Office, it was set at Christmas time. So there's a lot of funny stuff in those episodes. To me, it doesn't quite hit the heartstrings. Futurama had a great Christmas episode, too. One specifically I'm thinking of, that Matt Groening just did an awesome job of sort of satirizing the difference between how we should feel about things and how we do feel about things sometimes. One that came very close to making the list was an episode of Supernatural, a very Supernatural Christmas, that even when the episode comes up, when it aired, it popped up with a very special presentation, like that old NBC sort of retro logo. And it dealt with Sam and Dean, who are in the middle of a season where Dean sort of has this timestamp on his life. He knows that by the end of this season, if they don't do something, Dean is going to hell. And so the whole season has this cloud over it where Sam is trying to prevent Dean from dying before he can figure out a way to save his soul. And so that's a kind of a dark thing to hang over the episode. And they're tracking this thing that they believe to be an evil Santa Claus, or some sort of evil Santa Claus. Maybe it's Krampus, maybe it's Belsnickel, and they're doing all this investigating of like mall Santas, and they're trying to figure out who did it. And it's very darkly humorous. The resolution is interesting. Didn't quite make the list because, to me, you know, it was clever and it was funny. Didn't quite hit the heartstrings. But there's a lot of good episodes out there, and I'm not personally a huge fan, but of course South Park had many memorable. We had the Christmas Poo. I believe the very first ever episode of South Park was this weird kind of cracked out image of a child trying to perceive Christmas with a battle between Santa Claus and Jesus. Yeah. You know, so South Park had a lot of interesting things to say about Christmas. I think I would be remiss not to mention them, but so there they are. How about number 10 for you?
Yeah, so number 10, I think, is Friends. The Christmas Armadillo.
I was going to say, this is the Armadillo, right?
Yes.
I do remember the Armadillo.
This is the Christmas Armadillo one. To me, it was, you know, funny enough and just so, you know, out of 10 seasons, Friends, you know, nailed it with this episode, I think, because you have Ross, who is the people pleaser, trying to basically get his son interested in Hanukkah. And he's doing everything he can to figure out a cool way to do this. So he ends up going to a costume shop at Christmas to try to get a Santa outfit to tell his son about Hanukkah. And the only thing they have left is an armadillo outfit. And he goes in as an armadillo and he's just about to convince his son that, you know, he's Santa's representative and he's going to, you know, explain to his son, Ben, what Hanukkah is all about. And then Chandler comes walking in with an actual Santa outfit and the kid wants nothing to do with the Christmas armadillo, AKA his father. And so the whole, you know, the whole resolution, you know, to me it was good because, you know, the resolution of that, you have Chandler backing off, you know, kind of, you know, pushing Ben's father, Ross, to the forefront, like, okay, go ahead and explain it to him and, you know, let him understand, you know, something of his heritage. And so for me, that was just a great episode. What about you?
It's interesting. I think what's interesting about some of these, particularly TV shows, when they hit episodes, that they deal with this concept of the, not just Santa Claus, but what it is like to tell children the story that we know is patently false, but we're kind of using it to shape their values a little bit. You know, we're telling it to them because at some point, I think, some of us think it's good for them in some way, you know?
Yeah.
It'll help engender an understanding of their heritage or an understanding of the holiday or this heart behind the holiday. And so the Armadillo episode, that's a good example of what it is to kind of peer in and take a step back and say, well, we're trying to tell children something through this patently false thing.
Right.
So they do with comedy in this. Mine's a bit darker, and I'm going to be saying this probably every single time. Do you remember a TV show in the 80s, Tales from the Dark Side?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so George Romero, after he did Creepshow, they kind of did the TV versions, which Tales from the Dark Side. Now, a lot of people, I think, are probably, when you think of Christmas horror on television, they're probably more thinking of the Tales from the Crypt episode.
Yes.
And All Through the House, where Larry Drake played this extremely creepy, deranged Santa that's trying to break in and kill this woman. And I admit, that's a pretty creepy episode. But I was familiar with it from the comics. I was familiar from the old 70s show. So when I saw that episode, to me, it was like, yeah, it's kind of creepy. But the one that sticks with my more is this Tales from the Dark Side episode called Seasons of Belief. And I believe it happens in the fourth and last season of Tales from the Dark Side. It has a great character actor. He did a lot of TV work. E.G. Marshall is in it. He was one of the jurors in 12 Angry Men. And it's got that same kind of concept where you have, creates a very childlike Christmassy atmosphere. Two little children on Christmas Eve are having their parents tell them a story about the North Pole. Mm-hmm. But then it deviates wildly because instead of telling them about Santa Claus, they kind of mention Santa, but then they mention this other thing, the Grither,
yeah.
which is this horrible, monstrous thing that, I don't know, it doesn't explain why the parents have decided to tell the children this, and they're clearly being a little demented in doing it, but they're very serious about this. And so you're supposed to be watching this thinking, this is what it looks like from an outsider to see someone talk to you about Santa Claus.
Right.
But the Grither is this monster that will, if you say his name, he's going to come and he's going to strangle you to death.
Oh.
And they even have a song, which is, "Oh, Come All Ye Faithful," but they've set it up so, in fact, I'm not going to try to sing, but I'll provide an audio clip here so you can hear. This is what it sounds like.
Oh, I, a Grither, you cannot escape me, for pleading is useless, and so
And that sets the basis for the episode. The entire episode, once they establish this, the children are now definitely afraid to say anything about the Grither. And as the episode moves forward, we start to wonder if there really isn't a Grither hiding outside the house. So it's almost like that, if you think back to the movie Krampus that released last year, this right. is almost like a proto-Krampus where you watch these parents purposefully terrorizing their children with this potentially false, but since it's a horror show, probably not idea.
Right.
It's a nice 23, 24 minutes long. You can find it on YouTube. You used to be able to find it on YouTube. And it's pretty creepy, but it sticks with me. Again, it hits that nostalgia factor, which is big for me with these Christmas specials. And it's funny. It's interesting. It's not excessively well done with the special effects. It's a TV show from the 80s and not a particularly well-funded one. But I have fun with it. I think you will too.
Nice. So the next one on my list is going to go down and be The Middle. The Middle has a bunch of great ones.
Yes, they do.
For, yeah. you know, throughout their, what are they, in their eighth or ninth season running now?
Has it been that long?
Yeah. Yeah. They're either in their eighth or ninth season, I believe. So they have a bunch of great ones. The one I remember is one of the first ones where Frankie is basically turning everything over to her husband to run Christmas. You know, he's looking at her, how stressed, how frazzled she is, and, you know, is essentially making fun of her. You know, you're making it too complicated. You don't need to make it this complicated. And so she turns everything over to him. So he has his list of everything he needs to do. And basically within a week, he's got it all done. And of course, as he's doing these things and as he's checking off these boxes, she's getting irritated with him because he goes out, he buys a tree, he gets it set up, he gets it all decorated within a matter of hours. You know, so he does all that. And then she's looking at him like, well, we decorate that together. Why, you know, and he's just looking at it. Well, it's checked off the list. It's done. We need to move on. You know, for him, the Christmas season is just, it's a series of lists and checklists that you get done and move on. And for her, she's come to feel like, oh yeah, it is a series of lists and checklists. But as she's relinquished a lot of these things to him, she realizes that these are experiences that she really cherishes and loves. And so for her, it's this bittersweet thing where, you know, she's frustrated because of how proficiently he's doing it. But it's so exasperating because she wants to be involved in it again. She didn't really want to give it up and turn it over. And then at the end of the episode, we come to find out that things weren't as easy as he made them seem. It was just him putting on the dude face and I'm going to get it done and not show any emotion doing it. you know, and I think you see some of those themes that come out as well. We talked about with Friends, you know, that theme of Santa Claus playing in. I think that theme of that over-commercialization, wanting to give it all up. And then once you give it all up, you realize, okay, this isn't all commercialization. This is enjoyable. There are traditions in here that I love and cherish. And so even amongst the hubbub of everything, there are things that I want to celebrate and participate in. Your thoughts on that, Nathan?
That's one of the things that's interesting about the middle. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of it. It's funny, and it has some really nice observational moments. That being one of them, the idea that you're right, we take on all this stuff, it's work, work, work. But at some point, sometimes our to-do list becomes our traditions list, you know? And it because the value we find in things are sometimes because of the how we're doing them or who we're doing them for. I think a lot of times, kind of what the middle points out is when we lose sight of who we're doing them for, that's when it becomes that soulless sort of commercialization element. And that's what I value about that. I think that's something that the middle is good at, is kind of just touching a very relatable chord to make you think about your daily race, so to speak. So no, that's a good choice. And you're right, 8 seasons. It doesn't seem like it's been on that
long. I know.
I mean, honestly, because I'm thinking, you know, I'm doing the math. I'm like, I guess that's right, but it doesn't quite feel right.
I know.
So again, so we'll go from the middle to a TV show you can find on Netflix. It was originally a BBC production. Netflix has now started making this show themselves. It's an extraordinarily dark show. This is probably the darkest thing on my list. And yet I'm pretty well drawn to it, even as a Christmas show. The TV show itself is not Christmas themed, but this episode is. It's an anthology show called Black Mirror. Mm. Are you familiar with this, Nathan?
Vaguely.
So Black Mirror is, for the most part, referring to a darkened media screen, like a darkened TV screen, a darkened computer screen. That's sort of the Black Mirror. The Black Mirror is also, most of it's dystopian fiction, but based around the concept of where do we go wrong with our technology. So these are extraordinarily dark and sometimes very withering. A lot of times they're satirical. Mm-hmm. But this episode stars Jon Hamm, who really came to fame with Mad Men, the main star of Mad Men.
Yep.
And he plays Don Draper. And he's in this episode, and it's a really strong episode. But even this episode, which is about 70-some minutes long, is cobbled together out of other individual stories. There are two men, one of which is Jon Hamm, and the other one is Rafe Spall. And they're together in a wintry cabin, and neither one is exactly certain how the other got there. Okay. And they start to tell their stories of how they got there. And Ham is telling different versions of stories, and they all deal with this kind of future. There's a futuristic concept in there, which is this thing called the ZI, which is essentially you almost have a camera in your head or a setup in your head that allows the government to control what you view to an extent. So, for example, when someone gets say your wife gets a restraining order against you for her and her child, you can no longer see them. You just see a big white staticky cloud where they are. So there's an element where one character can no longer see his child. He doesn't even know what she looks like because there's just a cloud where she's supposed to be. Wow. And it really delves into some very dark ideas. These things take place at Christmas. And Christmas is a backdrop to this story, but it's really talking about how our humanity is affected by technology. I don't want to ruin it because there's a lot of interesting surprises and ways that the story goes. There's another very bizarre element where there's a Christmas party, and you have this the other thing that the Ham guy, one of his jobs is that he is working with young men to help them seduce women, and one of the ways he does this is by using the ZI to actually sort of almost hypnotize or coerce people to going home with the person he's trying to help.
Wow.
And so it's extraordinarily dark, but it gives you things to think about. I wouldn't say there's many warm and fuzzies there. It is emotional, but if you're a person who gets easily depressed at the holidays, I would maybe skip this, save it for the spring. But if you're somebody who wants to see something different, who's maybe indulged in most of everything that's out there in terms of Christmas, and maybe you are the bah humbug sort that doesn't want to sit through, you roll your eyes at the sappy kind of false sentiment, check out White Christmas, the Black Mirror. It's on Netflix. Don't say I didn't warn you. You've been warned. It's intense, but it's really good, particularly if you're a fan of science fiction.
Fascinating. I'll have to give that one a whirl. So coming up next on mine, I would say is Psych.
Again, yes. Psych. Yes. That would also have been on the runners up. That's a good call.
Psych has some great episodes on there. Well, episodes in general, but the Christmas ones are really fun too. One of the first Christmas ones they did was where his best friend Gus's parents are basically being accused of murder. Sean has had a crush and has had a relationship with Gus's sister. And, you know, the sister and Sean are afraid to tell everybody what's going on. And in the mix of all this, the parents are being accused of this crime that they did not commit. But it's just, it is a hilarious go back and forth between the two because the parents really don't like Sean. Sean had assumed that the parents loved him. And so now he finds out this news. And so now he is on a mission and a quest to show Gus's parents that he is worthy to be his best friend, to date their daughter and all of this stuff. So it, just a really funny episode, the way the hijinks roll around. And if you know anything about Psych, what Sean does in terms of solving his cases, pretending to be a psychic, is just off the wall, crazy, and very enjoyable.
Something I love about Psych is that you really don't, it's helpful, but you don't have to have actually seen, most of the time with Psych, you don't have to have seen a previous episode to get it.
Yes.
To understand.
Yes.
Particularly in the case of this episode.
Yes.
There's a couple episodes I feel like kind of just stand above the series a little bit, and that's Christmas one, which is kind of about the brave face we put on sometimes just for the benefit of other people. Yes. For Christmas. You know, it's like we're kind of doing it for you, but we're really doing it for us on your behalf.
Right.
And the other Psych episode that stands out to me as kind of being at the same level is the Twin Peaks episode.
Yes.
The Duel Spires. Like those two, to me, you could pull them out, show them to somebody without any knowledge of the
yes.
show, and you can enjoy it, which is always a sign of a good show. And in thinking about that, episode that didn't make my list that I'm going to mention too is Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Are you familiar with this?
I am familiar.
And they
yes.
did you ever see they did a Christmas episode?
I didn't see the Christmas
and
one,
one of
though.
The great moments, and I don't want to go into too much with, but some of the characters, he reveals through home videos how his parents actually got Christmas gifts, which was to break into other people's houses. And that's what he thought. That's what he thought Christmas was about. Going to other people's houses and sitting down at trees and unwrapping stuff and then moving to the next house. So like a weird amalgamation of like trick or treat and Christmas. And you see him opening the presents and all of a sudden the family comes down. He's like, quick, run. And they pick up and move. That's a good episode. But my number 8 is from a very short-lived show that I still think has a reasonable group of nostalgic fans. I know that Joss Whedon, when he was creating Buffy the Vampire Slayer, said that this show particularly was an influence on him. And I wasn't necessarily a huge, huge fan of it, but I remember seeing some episodes and just being really struck by them. And this was a show that even its short 17 episodes, I think, that there were, they had two really great holiday ones. They had a great Halloween one and a great Christmas one. And this, My So-Called Life. Do you remember this? With,
yes.
With Claire Danes and...
Yep.
And Jared Leto. And this particular episode, My So-Called Life, this was called So-Called Angels. And it was one of those things that could have almost been a little too on the nose. It's specifically dealing with sort of, I know here I go again, but like abused children mm-hmm. at the holidays. Particularly in this case, Angela Chase, who is the Claire Danes character, her friend, who is sort of this young man who's kind of in terms of his relationship with his family, he's letting them know that he's bisexual and these sorts of things, and he is beaten and he's kind of thrown out in the cold. And the way this episode deals with that is very interesting and very strange. It doesn't really focus on that element, but rather this idea of what happens when people are disconnected from their families and sort of just out on their own. And at what level do we discard people, or why do we discard people?
Right.
And there are some characters, there are some supernatural elements here, just like with the Halloween episode. The show, in other ways, is always 100% realistic, you know, in all the other episodes. This episode brings in angels, the other episode brought in ghosts, and these characters really interact with what's going on. And it's kind of a powerful episode because it focuses more on what it is to be displaced and cast out and what Christmas is really about. It's interesting how it does touch on some spiritual elements, but it's a pretty interesting, pretty affecting story, mostly because of how it's done. Now, I haven't seen it in maybe a year or two, but to me this was effective in the sensitivity without being maudlin, without sort of trying to slam a message home. I mean, the final screen, I believe, is something that comes up and tells you where to call if you know people are being abused, or if you know someone who's homeless and, you know, maybe runaways. So that part's a little bit like the after-school message part.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one of the unique elements of some of the Christmas episodes too, is I'm going to get to mine a little bit later on. It's in a silly sci-fi show, but it takes a very realistic approach to the realities and harshness of Christmas and what's going on during Christmas time, that not everyone is facing these idyllic circumstances with the Christmas spirit and family and friends, that there are some people who are very much alone, who are abused and in need. And I think that's a fascinating element that Christmas episodes can delve into to help other people relate to the things that are going on in life.
I think that's a good way to sum it up, and I think that's probably what's probably indicative about my list. As someone who has faith and who does think, like, in my celebration of Christmas, there's a little bit more going on there, I find, I guess, what draws me to some of these stories is that we start with darkness and we kind of contrast it against the light, or the potential for light. And if we categorize Christmas as this holiday when there should be some sort of banding together of the human spirit, I mean, a lot of these things draw on the Charles Dickens sort of feeling or sentiment, which isn't necessarily truly conducive to what maybe someone of faith thinks about the holiday. But I think it creates that ability to really, without any kind of darkness, without any sort of suffering or someone being without something, you kind of just have a fluffy sort of silly episode, you know, unless you really kind of are willing to cast the light in such a way that the shadows are there too, you don't really have a compelling picture.
Yeah. Well, no shadows in this next one. Eureka.
This was a great episode. Yes.
So Eureka, for those of you who are not familiar with it, it ran five seasons.
Super fun show too.
It is,
lots
yeah.
of fun. Silly science
one
fiction.
Of Joy and my favorite yeah. shows. It
now, was this
place
the episode
in...
you were just mentioning, or is that...
No.
Okay.
No, not this one.
No. That's right, because there's snow ninjas
yes.
in this.
Yes. So, in this episode, Eureka is a live-action sci-fi show.
Most of the time.
But in this particular episode, they decide to take a twist, and there's a machine that is turning everyone and everything in Eureka into cartoons. And so the sheriff's car actually becomes a cartoon voiced by Sheldon from The Big Bang Theory.
Yes. And it's pretty spot on.
Yes.
They do a nice job with it.
And, you know, I remember sitting down and watching this. And to me, there have been times where shows hit a certain stride and certain tone, and you get used to the certain feel of it. And they decide that in some of their Christmas things or in some of their special episodes to go completely wonky and do something so totally different. And they feel like, okay, we can kind of take this time to separate from our traditional tone and voice and do something else. I'm not typically a fan of that type of approach to shows. I like shows that have a consistent feel to them. So when they do specials, as long as the special stays within the feel of what the show's tempo is, whether that's, drama, horror, action, whatever it might be, I'm all for it. This one, it almost feels like it's taking a different tone, but it's really not, because it's Eureka. And so inside the world of Eureka, it works.
Yeah, it's still different. It's kind of like, to me, it's comparable to what they do with Buffy the Vampire Slayer did their musical episode.
Mm-hmm.
Where Buffy is a horror show, but it's a horror comedy, so it does have comedy, it has silliness, so when they burst into song it's ridiculous, but it's still, they find a way to make it work within the world. And in fact, in the Buffy episode, there's a reason that they all can sing, just like in Eureka there's a reason they're all cartoons.
Yes,
like it isn't simply that they're suddenly cartoons for this episode.
Correct.
There's a science fictional, very thin mind you, science fictional reason for why they're cartoons. And that was on my runners-up that I forgot to mention. That's a spot-on episode. At one point it was on the list and they got bumped off. But yeah, that's a good choice. And thing about Eureka, pretty family-friendly.
Yes.
I mean, I think that you could sit down and watch that episode. That's actually not a bad idea. That might be one to watch with the kids.
Nice.
I feel like it doesn't ever go too dark. Again, snow ninjas, I think, were the big threat of that
exactly,
particular
yes.
episode. So yeah, check that out. Even if you've never seen... This is another one where it helps if you've seen some of the others, but you could watch this.
Yes.
It's not necessarily the best gateway into Eureka, because I don't think it is a... It's not necessarily representative of exactly the way the show is, but it's a fun time. You could just watch it on its own.
Yes.
And the animation is fun.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they do, again, like you said, they do a very good job with it. And it was one that was just kind of stood and popped out in the series of shows. I think they did a couple of maybe not necessarily specific Christmas ones, but holiday ones. But this one really just popped out and it was fun and enjoyable.
Yeah, I loved it. Thought it was great. Speaking of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I know at the beginning you said, well, they didn't really do too much for me. But for me, number seven is the Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And actually, you know, thinking back on it, I really don't think there were that many Christmas episodes. And Angel, mm-hmm. I think, did have a few. But there weren't that many Buffy episodes that dwelt on Christmas. For one thing, most of the time they were fighting evil and had no time to worry about Christmas. Willow was Jewish, so, you know. But the one that they did sort of focus on was in season three, which is called Amends. And I don't want to go too much into this, even though this is an older show. But in the world of Buffy, by season three, there was a lot of stuff that happened. And mm-hmm. most people are aware that there's the relationship between Buffy, who's the human slayer fighting vampires, and then Angel, who is a vampire, the vampire with a soul. You can look that up on Wikipedia. And at this point in the series, Angel has sort of come out of a very dark period where he's been sort of killing everyone.
Right.
And he's back from hell, actually. And he's really struggling with whether or not to continue living, in a way. So it's weird because it almost evokes this idea. We hear sometimes that around the holidays, that's when the suicide rate and things like that go up. So it's strange that in the middle of kind of some silliness, you've got a lot of things going on mm-hmm. where Buffy is trying to kind of celebrate Christmas, but she's also encountering the situation with Angel, who at this point, they're sort of on the outs in terms of interacting with one another. And he is looking at himself as this sort of person who doesn't have purpose, who only seems to be doing evil, and is just convinced that maybe it's time that the world just doesn't need him anymore. Mm-hmm. What's interesting, though, for the show is this is kind of... this is one of the few instances where it's built very much into the mythology of what's happening.
Mm.
The villain of this episode is something called the First Evil, which is sort of just poisoning his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out to be the villain that crops up at the end. It's the big final villain that really Buffy faces at the end of the last season. So mm-hmm. it's its first appearance here. You also have this weird kind of thing between the character of Willow and Seth Green's Oz, where she's sort of, she's trying to sort of like give up her virginity to him. And the way that's handled is interesting because isn't quite what you'd expect. He's mm-hmm. sort of like, let's hold on.
Right.
And that entire episode is just very interesting because, again, kind of like the My So-Called Life episode, it's very grounded in human interaction and mm-hmm. human emotion. And to me, it really worked. And I thought it was interesting, too, because it did set up what happens in this episode becomes the catalyst for sending Angel over to his own TV show.
Mm-hmm.
But an emotional catalyst, not like, okay, here's how he gets there.
Right.
And you can see the roots that grow into the show occurring in this episode. So they managed to have a holiday episode, but it's not filler. It's a it's a rooted piece of the show. This is one case where I'd say you can't really watch it and get everything from it without experiencing the show itself, which I think is worth experiencing.
Right. Yeah. So before I get to my number six, I want to insert another runner-up in here that I wasn't really thinking of at the time, and that is Bones. The Christmas episode in season one.
Oh, it was me talking about Angel that sparked your memory, wasn't it?
It was. And the reason for this is because the first several seasons of Bones were terrific. As they progressed, it kind of drug and...
It just fell into the routine, became almost too much for it.
Yes, but this was very unique because in this episode, the scientists are exposed to a deadly virus and they're all quarantined together. They're given this shot that's supposedly supposed to help them, you know, deal with whatever symptoms might be coming, and they might experience certain side effects. One of the side effects is hallucinations. And David Boreanaz's character in that episode, for the time he is quote-unquote hallucinating, is fantastic. I thoroughly enjoyed his portrayal of that. And the interactions of all those characters in close quarters really allows them to develop and learn one another's stories in a very quick yet realistic way. You know, if you're going to put a group of people together in quarantine for 48 hours, there are going to be some things in a new group of friends that are going to come out that might not come out for a very long time. And so for me, I thought it was a very clever way of dispensing information about characters and allowing that information to get to other characters and opening them up to, you know, certain vulnerabilities. It's a fun episode. I wouldn't say it takes a detour from the typical what's going on in Bones, but it does feel very definitively Christmassy and enjoyable in that regard.
Yeah, and I think that everything, like Bones is one of those, again, it's a show that's character driven.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said before, it's fun to see what characters do with that, what the writers perceive to be the Christmas spirit.
Yes.
And that's kind of what happens there. So yep. Nice way to shove an extra one in there. I've done that a couple times too. So again, I like to say my list is getting better, but at least we're into comedy now. I think it's funny, you know, as I was looking through all the lists of like Christmas episodes out there, and I think we've done a good job so far of picking ones that are in their own ways original. And what I mean by original is it seems like your average thing to do with a Christmas episode is either spoof A Wonderful Life,
yes,
or just remake A Wonderful Life, or remake A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
Like, that's the thing. We'll just have the characters meet three ghosts, and
yep,
we'll do it. That does work sometimes, and one of the cases where I think it works is a Rowan Atkinson. This is not the Bean Mr. Christmas, with the Mr. Bean Christmas, which is also a very fine episode. But do you remember a show called Blackadder?
Yes.
So Blackadder, which has a very Monty Python sort of, yes, feel, and Rowan Atkinson plays this despicable, slimy kind, yeah, of, but humorously so, human being.
Right.
So the Blackadder Christmas special is pretty. Have you seen this?
I have not seen this.
This is one to check on YouTube. This is it's fantastic because Blackadder, in all of his other iterations, is always, like you say, this kind of just purposefully, cheerfully nasty guy.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, we meet Ebenezer Blackadder, who he's basically everything that Ebenezer Scrooge becomes at the end of Scrooge. He's caring and giving and nice and generous, but orphans keep taking advantage of him. And like these, and his employees are taking advantage of him, and everybody, and people are stealing his food, and he's just besieged. And then the ghost of, I think it's basically Christmas present or something, comes to him. But what's interesting is it's Robbie Coltrane, and he looks, I almost should put a picture on a link to a picture, maybe I will. He looks identically like Hagrid. He's the actor who plays Hagrid. When he busts through the door, just like he comes into that first Harry Potter film, and he's got big hair and a giant bushy beard. He looks like Hagrid.
That's awesome.
So it suddenly makes you aware. It's like, I think the creators of Harry Potter were kind of playing us a little bit here. You're looking like, that's Hagrid. And he talks like Hagrid. And he comes in and he's going to award Blackadder. You know, he just wants to tell Blackadder, you're just such a great, nice guy. And look, let's look at your the people in your past, your descendants and your ancestors, and look at them and let's see how far you've come. And he sees them and he's like, hey, I like those guys. They're witty and they don't, right, let people mess with them. And hey, it's kind of good to be bad. And so he's like, well, why don't you show me the future? And he's like, if I'm like them, what happens to me? And he's like the Lord Commander of the galaxy. And he's like, what if I stay as I am and is a nice guy? And he shows him he's like the slave of the guy now. And he's like, well, okay. So he, from that day forward, he vows to be a horrible person. And yet they show that just as he becomes a horrible person, he starts dismissing everyone and they're about to give him £50,000 for being the nicest guy, you know. So it's even though it sounds like I spoiled this thing, the episode itself is so silly,
yeah,
that you're just watching all of this stuff happen, and it is it's pretty good. So
that's,
I would,
awesome,
put that on the list. It is not, it's not dark, but it is definitely acerbic.
Right, so, right. That's great. So my next one officially in the list,
officially
in the list, Smallville. And it's really, Smallville.
I thought you were going to put I thought Smallville,
yes,
was coming.
It has many, holiday episodes in it, but this one is specifically Christmas and it's called Lexmas. And it's interesting because it takes almost that Wonderful Life twist, but instead of what would life be like without Lex, Lex is presented with an opportunity that if he changes his ways, he's given this vision of what his life could be. He's not successful with money and power, but he has a family, he has children, he has love, he has friends, he has people who care for him. But in that turn of events, someone really close to him will die. And so Lex, as he's being shown this vision of what he could have if he changes his ways, decides that he is not going to become, well, he doesn't want to become that person, but he also, or he wants to become that person, but he doesn't want to give up the money and power that he has because he wants the ability to save the people who are closest to him. And so for me, it was a very well acted job by Michael Rosenbaum, you know, who played Lex Luthor in that series, just to see, you know, okay, what would happen if he were to turn from his ways now? We've been given a clear path. He starts out as a good person who's been, you know, kind of dealt a raw hand in life with his father and the things that are going on. He makes some bad decisions, which propels him into making more bad decisions. But he's given this option, and he's shown what his life could be like if he just, if he puts all that beside him, if he, you know, throws away the money, the power, and all that stuff that's really holding him down and holding him back. But he can't stand to lose someone close to him. And because of that, he decides, no, I want to retain the money and the power, and I'm going to save this person at all costs. And so
that's how Darth Vader turned to the dark
side. Exactly.
Spoilers.
Exactly. And so it's just, but it is a very, it's better acted.
It's much better done. Well, I always kind of wish, you know, could we see what this episode would have been like with, you know, say if we'd had the Lex Luthor from Batman versus Superman.
Oh my gosh.
If we could just see what, you know.
Let's not.
but seriously, what I liked about this episode is, you're right, it isn't just that fluff, wonderful life thing. It kind of gets at the heart of what makes Lex Luthor the comic book character. Mm-hmm. And I thought that Smallville did this better than any other movie, TV iteration, is you got the heart of the Lex Luthor character, which isn't that he just does things out of pure evil.
Right.
There's a sense of gain, but he has this sort of compass to himself. It's just distorted a little bit.
Right.
Some might say not all that distorted
right. These
days, but that what he is doing for the good of what he wants to protect is really fine.
Yes.
And it's kind of the building blocks of a mundane evil, if you will. He finds a lot of ways to justify it. And so I thought Rosenbaum and his and the Lex Luthor character were, in a lot of ways, I mean, this is my personal opinion, were far more interesting than Superman in Smallville, than Clark. And that kind of, for me, create an imbalance in the show, but that's a good episode.
Yeah. What's your next one, Nathan?
Okay, so now here's where I get to cheat by calling a tie. And these are two episodes from shows that were in a lot of ways very similar, created by the same creator.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think that if they're not the same year, they're very close to one another. And this is where you mentioned earlier that there are a couple shows where they ran for a few seasons and they just had good Christmas episodes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it's hard for me to pull one and say, this is the best.
Yeah.
There was a period of time in the late 90s, around 98, 99, where X-Files, the X-Files is on air at this time, and Chris Carter, who's the creator of X-Files, also creates a show called Millennium. Have you ever seen Millennium?
Yes.
Of course, it was trying to catch on to that, here comes the millennium, we're heading for 2000, what's going to happen? You know, a little prior to Y2K, we had this sort of biblical apocalypse sort of prime to happen on Millennium. So that show always had a very limited, I think, shelf life. So it shows up in 1997. They both do a couple of Christmas episodes. And X-Files in 98 does an episode just called Christmas Carol that deals with Gillian Anderson's Scully character learning that her sister dies in this beginning of this episode, and she learns that she may have a daughter. Mm-hmm. It's really what's interesting about this episode is it totally captures the kind of warmth and tenderness we kind of associate with Christmas, but also that when something dark or intrusive can come in. And speaking as someone who lost a family member just at Christmas last year, that can be a very difficult thing where you're trying to embrace what everybody wants you to embrace about this holiday. You still want to be able to give and be a part of things, but it can be kind of hard when there's a cloud over it. What X-Files does is fascinating because it's really a two-part episode. But this first episode, it begins a storyline that goes into the next one and ultimately has an arc throughout the show, but it can still stand alone in a way because it's a really strong performance by Gillian Anderson. And the way it's handled is really good. The episode, though, I think is probably more, from a Christmas perspective, kind of stands out, I think, to people, is called The Ghosts Who Stole Christmas, I think.
Okay.
And the idea is that Mulder and Scully go into this house, it's around Christmas time, and they get trapped in this sort of game that these two ghosts, played by Phyllis Diller and Ed Asner, are sort of messing with them. But while that sounds like it'd be really funny, oh, Phyllis Diller and Ed Asner, it's going to be shenanigans.
Right.
And it is shenanigans, but it's also really creepy because they're sort of putting Mulder and Scully in this place where they're replaying it old murder.
Yeah.
And the ghosts, you know, the ghosts mean business. They kind of want to kill anybody who comes in this house. And it might be that they're going to kill Mulder and Scully by having them kill one another. And it's a creepy episode. It's a funny episode. It has some kind of heartwarming elements to it, but that's really good. And then the other Millennium episode, deals with Lance Henriksen's character Frank Black, and this was a very dark, very kind of dour show. And this episode's really not any different, but it deals with Frank Black going back and trying to deal with his father and his estrangement from his father. And his daughter is now starting to develop the same sort of psychic kind of abilities that he has, and he doesn't know how to interact with her. Mm. And he's remembering now that there was a similar disconnect between his father and him that has now created this great gulf. What makes this show really interesting is the father is played by Darren McGavin, who the double kind of whammy here is Darren McGavin played the Kolchak the Night Stalker, which was the inspiration for X-Files and Millennium. But Darren McGavin is also the old man from A Christmas Story.
Right.
You know, the leg lamp and everything. So to see him in this really dark but heartfelt take on Christmas is interesting. It's downbeat. But I would recommend all three of these episodes. They're really fascinating takes, and they kind of stand apart from the usual supernatural stuff.
Hmm. Fascinating. That's great. So my next one, Lois and Clark.
Double Superman.
That's right. Okay. Double Superman.
This I probably have not seen.
So there are three Christmas episodes in Lois and Clark. There are four seasons, and then there are three episodes. And to me, all of them were very enjoyable. One of them was a more silly episode with Winslow Schott, who is the toy master, who, you know, is basically trying to take over the world because he's been wronged. Poison Metropolis. Just a fun little Christmas episode. Denise Richards actually guest stars in this one, where before she was fully known. So it's interesting to see her in this role. But it's a fun episode because you get to see Clark Kent acting goofy because he's...
Wait, we've never seen that before.
That's right. but it's, you know, it's a fun episode to see Dean Cain playing Clark Kent acting goofy. Let me rephrase that.
That's fair, fair enough, yeah.
And so, you know, it's just, it's a great fun episode. The second one that they do, Clark Kent is, or Superman is poisoned. Somebody finds a germ, a virus from Krypton, and he is poisoned, and he's got to try to fight off the virus, and so they've got to use kryptonite and all that stuff. And then the third one, which was a fascinating one, was where they introduce Mixis Pidalic, who is the mischievous elf from the extra dimension who's coming in.
There's some people out there that are glad you pronounced that because they probably read it in comics for years.
And then there are others who have
or like
pronounced
he just
it
said
for
it
years.
Wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's more going to be the one.
Yes.
My pastor told me a long time ago, if you say a word, just say it with confidence and move on. Just
cough at the end,
right.
Bruce Campbell style.
That's right. I said most of it. So he comes in, and what's kind of fascinating about that is everybody's starting off the holidays in high spirits. And this little imp from this dimension is coming in and replaying the days. And every time he replays them, something worse happens. And so you're getting this
idea. Sort of like Groundhog Day before Groundhog Day.
Exactly. But instead of things really progressing and getting better, they're really start off and they get worse and worse and worse. And, you know, Superman realizes what's going on, and he, you know, is able to, quote unquote, break the spell of it and kind of put people back on track to where they should be. But even with that, not everything's left perfect, which I found interesting. There were still, because people's days had been broken and there had been some heartaches and things like that that had gone on, people were kind of left to try to pick up the pieces and move on. So even though it's a fun, lighthearted one, it was fascinating to me that they decided not to totally fix everything that had been broken, that they kind of left it for the people to try to pick up and move on through the pieces. So that one I actually really enjoyed probably more than the other two.
And that sounds fun. Like I said, I haven't seen a lot of Lois and Clark. I saw it on and off when it was on. Mm-hmm. Don't know that I ever saw any Christmas episodes. So two things happen now with my list. One is everything gets significantly lighter for the most part. There's still some hints, but I mean nothing like I'm looking at that last back half of the list, and that was really the bah humbug. So here's the point. When the next four entries elevate a little bit. The other thing is really, I'm looking at all four of these, and there's another one that comes to mind. And really, just about any of these could be a tie for number one, in a sense. Because I think they're all that good. Like, on any given day, I could say, hey, this is my favorite.
Right.
So for me, number four is a really big one because it was the first ever episode of this juggernaut, which is The Simpsons. The very first premiere episode of The Simpsons. Even though they had originally, of course, been on the Tracy Ullman show with little segments. And then technically, I think this was the eighth episode they made, but it was the first one to ever air. And it aired on December 17th, 1989. I actually remember it coming on. And I remember watching it with my family. I think I was in fifth grade at the time. It was interesting because it was the same two or three day span where I saw It's a Wonderful Life for the first time.
Ah.
And I think maybe Who Framed Roger Rabbit? So it was interesting. I was like seeing all this great
interesting
stuff.
Interesting combination.
My head nearly exploded by the end of the night. And I remember my parents were just a little bit unsure of, should they be watching this? We went, oh, it's already on. Let's see. Can it be worse than Married with Children?
Right,
who I think
right.
had Santa get shot out of a cannon at a shopping mall and he lands dead in the yard of like Al Bundy, who then takes his sack of gifts and keeps them and then puts the costume on.
That's awesome.
But the Simpsons episode, Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire, is the title. And I think what's interesting, if you go back and watch some of the really old Simpsons, like, the Simpsons developed such an acute, like, sense of satire that after a while it became all, like, kind of, like, jokes and sight gags and, you know, the characters almost die every episode. You know, they get to the point where they're like, satirical icons more than they are, like, people.
Right.
And yet the very first season or two of the show, they did try to keep them within, even for a cartoon, into sort of reasonable bounds as characters. Like, Homer Simpson isn't just a lout who does ridiculously,
right.
completely moronic things. He's kind of a struggling, you know, kind of lower middle class guy.
Right.
Even middle class, he's right on the cusp, really.
Right.
He's just trying to make way for his family. And can they run down? He's a guy that kind of people can relate to a little bit because
right.
in the first episode, he's trying to make a way for his family to have a nice Christmas. His son's got a tattoo. They spend all the money removing the tattoo. They tell him they're not going to have a raise at work. And so he gets this job as the mall Santa. And it's interesting kind of where you're talking about, where it's clear that Groening is trying to make one of these, Matt Groening, who made the show, is trying to give you kind of the antithesis of the typical Christmas story where, okay, we know Homer's going to try and he means well and he's going to lose everything. But at the end, he's going to get everything back. And then doubly so, you know, kind of like The Wonderful Life where at the
right.
end he's got all this great stuff. And yes, we say, you have friends, George Bailey, but you know, you also got all your money back. You're
right.
not going to jail, you know.
Right.
It isn't really just friends. And yet, the way this episode wraps up, which is really kind of the origin story, if you will, for Santa's little helper, their dog,
yep.
and that's where his name comes from, you see then at the end of the episode, which is very true as in real life, you have this guy who tries, he kind of fails, and yet through it, he managed to salvage something that is meaningful for he and his family.
Yes.
But he doesn't have everything.
Yes.
And as the show progresses, he never has everything.
Right.
But to me, this is far, it's far funnier, it's far more affecting and moving, I think, than a lot of what comes later. Even though I love The Simpsons, I don't watch it much anymore. It's just
right.
gone on for so long.
Yeah.
Still going, in fact. But a great first episode, and I think if anyone, that would be a great one to revisit, because I think you'll be surprised at how much the characters feel more real.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that you bring that one up, because out of all the Simpsons episodes, and I again, like you, I have not followed with it through the years, but I've seen handfuls of them. That is the most memorable one to me. And part of that is because with that episode, I believe that they made I know they made a book to go along with that episode, because I had the book when I was
young. Nice.
So, you know, I remember every Christmas pulling out the book and reading the book. And, you know, when the episode was coming on, I'd watch the episode. And that was the only Simpsons episode when I was real young that I was allowed to watch.
Yeah.
It's one
of those cases, if they had not made this long-running show that you had afterwards,
right.
I think we would still always have this. And this would be a, like The Grinch Who Stole Christmas,
yes.
like a classic. A
yes.
classic that people could latch on to. So that's my number four. How about yours?
Agreed, yeah. So for me, number four is going to Perfect Strangers. You remember the TV show back in the 80s?
Of course, yes.
So Perfect Strangers.
Bronson Pinchot.
That's right. So the very first season they did a Christmas episode in that season like everyone does. And to me, this one is a great tearjerker, because it reminds me of how the rest of the world functions. Now, granted, back in the 1980s, this is kind of how America functioned a little bit too, but we were starting to pull away from this. And that is that other countries don't shy away from this idea, or they don't get wrapped up in this idea of political correctness. Other countries realize and accept that this is the Christmas season. There's no need to, you know, say Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, and not offend people. They understand that Christmas is the biggest thing that's going on right now. And in this episode, Balki and Larry are trying to get home to Larry's house in Minnesota. He's going to be the Christmas boy who gets to pass out all the presents. It's his year.
Yes,
there are 11 people, you know, 11 children in his family. So every 11 years he gets this honor. And, you know, so he's going to be it this year. And he's really excited for Balki to come home. And they end up being snowed in Chicago and they can't go anywhere. And of course, Larry has this real downcast attitude and, you know, turns into, you know, the Grinch and Scrooge all wrapped into one. And Balki is doing his best to cheer him up. And eventually Balki just has enough and decides he's going to put Larry in his proper place. And so, you know, they're getting to the point where Larry's settled down and they're passing each other presents and they're opening their presents and ooh, ah. And Balki turns to Larry and he says, happy birthday. And Larry gives him this weird look. And Balki, you know, because Balki's got all these weird customs from, you know, the fictitious island of Meepos that he, you know, is teaching people. And so, you know, Larry's giving him this look and Balki's like, he goes on to explain, no, we say happy birthday on Meepos because it reminds us. Now, they don't say baby Jesus, but he says of baby Jesus who came during this time. And, you know, Larry's like, oh, yeah, I guess I forgot about that. But, you know, to me, it was a fun episode. There are great one-liners in there, as there always are in this series where, you know, Balki is messing up sayings. And having a Chinese exchange student for the past 2.5 years, I can tell you that those misrepresentation of sayings and phrases happen often. And they are hysterical. And so, you know, going back and watching Perfect Strangers in light of having a foreigner living with Joy and I has been doubly funny and exciting. So
you're saying that Perfect Strangers got it right?
In that episode, I think they did.
So my number three is another show, a comedy from the 80s. But not a sitcom. This is The Wonder Years. Mm. And The Wonder Years had several Christmas episodes over its entire run. And to me, of all the things on this list, I feel like The Wonder Years, when they did their Christmas episodes, even though they're taking place in a very specific time frame, a time period, period piece, if you will, and straight ranging from the 50s on up, that they capture, to me, this kind of Christmas feeling, or at least what we kind of think of this American, somewhere Norman Rockwell Christmas, the kind of picturesque postcard kind of thing that even in the 80s was still happening. You could go to the grocery store or and they would have Santa in the back. You know, a lot of these customs hadn't changed that much in the 1980s. And so you look back 30 years and some of these things were still happening. Now things are a little bit different. But at that time, so The Wonder Years had two episodes that really struck me. The very first season, they have an episode, which I think is just like the Christmas episode, or it's Christmas or something is the name of it. And it happens in the first season, and it deals, it's sort of twofold things are happening, where Kevin Arnold, who's the, of course, he's the Fred Savage character, and his brother and the father, they're really salivating to get a color television. You know, that's the big thing. They want to get this television. And that's his Christmas goal, if you will. And yet at the same time, his young crush, Winnie Cooper, who kind of through the, you know, she persists through the whole show, her brother has just passed away in the war earlier that same year. So he's looking at her and seeing her distraught at Christmas time. And they want the TV, but they're realizing over here for someone who's in need and what can they do for them. And it's heartfelt, it's funny, but it's also pretty sincere. It finds a way to be sincere and kind of ask that question. And we've even encountered that, you know, you get so caught up in the, I'd like to have this, I'd like to have these things for my family, I'd like to do this. And the forgetting that usually, you know, an element of Christmas, I think, that would be reflective of even the spiritual aspect is, are we doing what we can to reduce the suffering of others or to help others? And we kind of lose sight of that sometimes, or we can. Or we try to find ways in which we can manufacture to make sure it happens. I think we're also busy. We try to do this. And I know that you and I, you know, we've done different things to try and do that. But, you know, just the other day I was encountered with a, you know, in the term of this word, a neighbor who, you know, wasn't even aware that they had, you know, we're not celebrating Christmas. And why is this? Because there's been a loss. And, you know, it sometimes you lose sight of that. And then the question is, what can you do? And this episode kind of captures that in a heartfelt way. And then there's an episode that's a little bit lighter and sillier that happens a few years later, where the Arnolds have this neighborhood Christmas party, and that they always had growing up, and they always had such a great time. But this year, everything goes wrong. I think the guy dresses like Santa is like chugging alcohol down in the basement or something. I remember all the details, but basically, it's they just realize that their fellow neighbors are coming apart in some way, and things aren't. It's the end of an era, if you will. But at the same time, they have to take them for who they are, you know. So both really good, I think. What's interesting is they strip away the rest of the Christmas stuff and get down to that love thy neighbor sort of concept that was something that people tried to do and practice in the 50s, but are you doing it in your heart? So really good stuff, funny, charming. I think Wonder Years might be on Netflix now. I know they had a big issue with the music. So I think even though the episodes are there, they're almost not quite as good because a lot of the classic songs that we're familiar with aren't in the episodes anymore.
Oh, fascinating.
So, but two really good episodes. I think the Christmas Party was the name of the later one, and it was in one of the seasons in the 90s, so episode 3 or 4.
Okay.
And Christmas was the first season. So if you're looking for those, they can be watched standalone. They're sort of, they've got that reminiscent feel. Right. So you can watch them. If you've never seen The Wonder Years, it's a good way to get a handle on the show.
I mean, I think it's important to note that most of everything I think that we're talking about, when series do their Christmas episodes, pardon me, they tend to do standalone ones. They're ones that people can jump into. If you haven't been following the series, most people will come into a Christmas episode and they'll say, yeah, I haven't checked it out. Let's go ahead and see what's going on. And they can kind of pick up.
I think
up
most
and,
of the time. Yeah. The one that on my list, the only one on my list that was the Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which still could be viewed independently, but it's so dependent on what's going on.
Right.
That might be the only case. And some of the runners-up, like the Supernatural episode, some of those that are, they're trying to keep tied into the major story. I think of The Flash had a couple decent Christmas episodes, but those were also very much in tune with the show. You kind of had to watch the show to catch what's going on.
Yep.
Number three for you?
Yeah, so number three for me would be JAG.
I remember JAG.
Yeah, JAG was a great series. Really enjoyed it. And what was interesting about the series is that at a time where you had a shift in, again, this idea of political correctness and everything that was going on, I thought it was interesting that they still didn't shy away from conservatism. You know, they dealt with the honor and integrity of the military, even when horrible things were going on. This was still an honorable institution. There was still integrity to be found in what was going on in the military. And I believe they portrayed that very well.
Which isn't necessarily only a conservative viewpoint.
No. But they did deal a lot more with conservative issues and leaning in conservative directions. And if you watch the show, that is very clear.
Which was what, like mid-90s, right? Like,
I think it was it was early to mid to late. Because I think the final season wrapped up in 2000.
Okay.
Maybe it was later than that. Maybe it was 2003, 2004. One of the ones that stood out to me was Christmas episode where it's interesting because everybody is, you know, accounting for and trying to make their Christmas plans. And I think this was in one of the later ones, either episode or in season 6 or 7, maybe 8. It could have been as late as 8. The father of one of the characters comes on, and he's a military chaplain. And he comes on, and it's interesting because he gives this message from the viewpoint of Joseph. And it was neat because he just does a good job at portraying, you know, what would this have been like from Joseph's perspective? And he's giving this from the perspective of fathers. And so I thought that it was just a really nice one. Again, just does a good job of bringing you into that Christmas spirit, into that Christmas mood. There are hijinks and things that are going on. Not everything's falling into place. But the people go, and once they really, they hear the true message and meaning of Christmas and understand what that, and are reminded of what that is, it causes them to recenter and focus. And I think that is important, particularly for us as people of faith, is knowing, okay, as crazy as this time of the year can be and as busy as it can be, pulling us back to the reality of what this season truly means. That if everything else falls apart, there's still a greater hope that we have in Jesus. And that's the type of thing that I really enjoyed about this episode, was just kind of pulling that all together and reminding people of what's most important.
It's easy to say the meaning of Christmas without defining the meaning of Christmas. And you could view that through a lot of lenses, through a spiritual or maybe a more humanist lens. But when they kind of just leave it as a very fluffy sort of idea, that's when it doesn't really work. But in, I remember a really good episode of the TV show Wings. Wings had an episode, a Christmas episode, and one of the characters, Faye, who is, you know, they kind of realize that she's still dealing with the death of her husband, which has happened like a year earlier. And it's a very poignant, very interesting, and in how they handle that, it does. You're getting at, well, what is the purpose of Christmas?
Right.
And what is the thought? And so I thought that I do appreciate that, even sometimes if you're drawing a line under something, at least you are taking a stance and presenting a view of Christmas that someone can grasp. My number two is something I absolutely love, and it's a standalone because it's an anthology, an episode of The Twilight Zone, the original Twilight Zone. Although, when they re-released The Twilight Zone in 85, or in the mid-80s, they did redo this episode. This episode was the second season. It was episode 11, and it was called Night of the Meek. Now, have you seen many Twilight Zone episodes?
I saw many more of them when I was younger, so it's been a number of years.
You may or may not remember this one, but this is Art Carney plays Henry Corrin, who he's a mall department store Santa, but he's also a drunk. And he's a drunk seemingly because he's very sensitive and aware of the suffering going on around him, of all the children who are starving, who don't have anything. And he's this mall Santa, but he's almost drinking to kind of dull the responsibility that he feels. But he is down and out just like everybody else. He has no ability to impact any kind of change, so he feels he can't do anything. He's barely sober enough to like have the children sit on his lap. I mean, he's not quite Billy Bob Thornton, a bad Santa. He has a good heart, but he is completely, and this is, it's interesting because of the way it's shot, for one thing, is that it's shot very much like almost a it's done like a live episode, so it looks like a play. It doesn't have the kind of more polished, almost movie look as some of the other Twilight Zone episodes. So that's element where it's being filmed and in that feel. And Art Carney does an excellent job of playing this guy. You, even though it's maudlin and a little overly dramatic, you do feel, hey, this is a guy who's hurting because he's hurting for others. And the Twilight Zone wouldn't be the Twilight Zone without there being a supernatural twist. But this is not a horror episode or a thriller episode. This is a fantasy. And what he discovers, what he finds, is Santa's bag left. And he doesn't do what Al Bundy did with it. When taken home, he finds that you can, you know, it keeps kind of giving. And that he finally has a means to do what he's always wanted to do, which is to help others. And what he does with the bag demonstrates the kind of person he really is. And he kind of comes into his own. And we realize that the own he's coming into is the namesake that he's adopted, the Santa Claus. He starts to become like the guy that he's always, you know, the guy he's always wanted to be is this figure. So there's a lot of interesting things of he's given the means, he starts to transform. And again, it pulls the heartstrings, but it kind of works. And Art Carney is so good, he kind of grounds it. And it's one of those things where you're walking, this is such a load of hokum, but you're kind of wiping the tears. I mean, it's effective. If you're going to do the Santa Claus story, this is one of the best examples I've ever seen done of it. The 85 one I think was okay. It wasn't as good. It kind of, because it didn't have Carney, because it didn't have the immediacy of that kind of like, that live thing adds a lot to it. It really kind of just makes it, grounds it. So if you've never seen that, Twilight Zone, I know for a fact, is on Netflix. So you can see this. And it's a family friendly. You can sit down and watch it with your family. And it's a good, it's good and it's powerful. Yeah. It's only about a half hour long.
Yeah. And I think those are the episodes, too, that really show us a realistic life transformation. You know, here's a guy who has problems, you know, whether they're the right reasons, wrong reasons. He's definitively has problems in life, but he wants to be better. And yeah, so in the process,
it's overdone, but it feels legitimate.
Yeah. And I think in the process, you know, what we're shown is in the process of stepping outside of yourself and the problems that you have and you know, rightly focusing on the problems of others. You know, I think, you know, that we talk about, yes, we want to be focused on people outside of ourselves, but there's a right way to do that and a wrong way to do that, you know? And so once you get beyond the self-destructive way of doing that and truly start focusing on those around you who are in need, there is a true transformation that can occur. And I think that's one of the great things about episodes like that. My number two is MASH. MASH had a total of 3 Christmas episodes in it. Dear Dad, which was a fun episode, very silly, very comical. Dear Sis, which is my favorite one of the bunch, and then another one, I think it was called Beat Death or Racing to Death or something like that, where they're trying to keep someone alive until after Christmas has passed, so the news doesn't have to be forwarded to the family that their father, husband has died on Christmas Day. My favorite of them was Dear Sis with Father McKahey, because I feel like it was such a great performance, and there was a happy blend of silliness that was going on, the humor of MASH, blended with the reality of war and the toll that it takes on people. In this particular episode, Father McKahey ends up decking a patient because the patient's not cooperating. He's overtired, over-exasperated, and he just clocks the guy. And it deals with his struggles as a person of faith in this setting. Is he being effective? Is what he's doing really making a difference? And what's great is at the end of that, Pierce kind of rallies the camp together to sing Peace on Earth. And it's a beautiful rendition of that song. You know, and it really, that, again, you get the silliness that is MASH, but you get the blended reality of war and the toll it takes on everyone. And so for me, that was just one that was really enjoyable and my favorite of the 3 of the MASH episodes.
Yeah, and MASH is one that I think it just, for whatever reason, it didn't like come to mind when I was making the list. But I would agree that they're just as good as really anything we've mentioned here. And MASH is very much a show of its time, but it was a great show. I mean, it was a great show all the way across the thing, and in a lot of ways was just as strong as the movie, the Altman movie that it was derived from. In some ways better, because it was able to go on for. And those Christmas episodes were very strong because they had such rich characters. Mm-hmm. Then they didn't shy away from like we're gonna handle a story that's gonna matter and it's gonna. Like, I guess this is what you probably noticed about my list, that in the ones where we're dealing with actual shows, you know, I have several anthologies on here, but there's a reverberation, even if the episode itself is kind of like can stand alone, it reverberates, the actions that occur in the episode reverberate throughout the show.
Yes.
And I think that that's what's, like, notable about some of these. So, my number one, I was kind of going back and forth because I say my nostalgic, like, I almost have 2 here. There's the one kind of for adults, not solely adults. And then there's, like, if you have kids, you know what is a great, I personally think, it hits the notes perfectly for a Christmas episode. It's Sesame Street, Christmas Eve on Sesame Street, from, like, the 80s. But, like...
That's awesome.
But it's really fun, and I was thinking about this, man, I want to sit down and watch this with my kids. I really remember that growing up. Because it played out so many different little stories. I mean, you have Oscar the Grouch is that grouchy, you know, Big Bird is the full of hope, loves Christmas, just buys into the whole thing. That kind of person who could be gratingly annoying for the person who sees the darkness, or at least sees the reality. Right. Like, why are you like this? This isn't realistic. But, you know, is there value in being that kind of over-the-top belated? The child joy, you know? Right. One of the reasons I enjoy Christmas in recent years is really kind of solely by seeing it through my kids' eyes. Not solely, but they help me sort of get a better understanding of it. You know, my kids are so excited to do like the things like the Operation Christmas Child and stuff like that and be involved. And they're concerned. And my son is like talking about, well, I hope that these gifts get to the kids that are supposed to. And it's a good kind of recharge for me. It's that kind of naive, simple hope. And, and it's captured perfectly. And Oscar the Grouch is like, Santa can't fit down these chimneys. And now Big Bird's worried about it. He's thinking about it. He's like, he's right. The reality doesn't allow for this. What's going to happen? And so in this kind of silliness, it's encapsulated. At the same time, you have the gift of the Magi story playing out with Bert and Ernie.
Yep.
And Grover's doing his own goofy thing. But I mean, it's just a fun kind of training wheels for the Christmas concepts that are there that make it a lot of fun. That is not my number one. My number one is a show that it was originally a show back in the 60s. Then it came back in 2005, which is Doctor Who. Doctor Who has become very well known for its Christmas episodes. But this one that they did in 2010. So at this point, you had had a couple of... Christopher Eccleston was the first Doctor in 2005. Yes. Then David Tennant comes in the next season. And then after Tennant, who Tennant lasts for... how long does he... he lasts for like two or three seasons. Yeah. Two seasons, I think. And then Matt Smith comes in as the Doctor. Yeah. And I like all iterations of the Doctor. Right now, Peter Capaldi is the Doctor. But during Matt Smith's run at the end of 2010, they have a Doctor Who episode called Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. And again, I've talked about how I'm not a fan of taking the Scrooge story and just laying it on to a Christmas episode. Right. But have you seen any of Doctor Who?
Yeah, I've seen.
Have you seen this Christmas special?
I have not seen that one.
This is something that, again, particularly if you've not seen Doctor Who, you can kind of take this, watch it. It'll give you a feel for what Doctor Who is.
Yeah.
But it also just tells a really cool story with some fabulous special effects. And it takes, I won't get into too much of the outlying story, but you've got Doctor who again is this character. He has chosen the title Doctor because that is really more his ethos. He wants to be the healer, even though he hasn't always been that in his life. So this is a character who's been around for a very long time. At this particular point, he has also been in wars where he has been sort of the destroyer, if you will. And so his goal to not just do no harm, but do well, comes up against, he's on this planet, his friends are caught in this orbit around a planet that is filled with storms. It's surrounded by storms. Those storms are seemingly controlled by this tower, and in this tower is a grumpy old miser. But he's played by Michael Gambon, who is a great British actor. Mm-hmm. And Gambon is obviously, he's Kazran, Sardis, you know, he's clearly Ebenezer Scrooge. Right. And it's even addressed this. I mean, when Matt Smith is trying to figure out, how am I going to get through this guy? He's a complete miser. He is taking people as collateral and freezing them when their families can't pay and putting them in a giant vault of all these frozen people. We find out part of that reason that he's like this is his father was like that and was domineering to him. And as a child, that's where it broke. That's where things broke. Just like Ebenezer Scrooge, he realizes he slowly got this way. He's broken as a child, essentially. And when Matt Smith meets him, and of course, Doctor Who flies around in a time machine.
Right.
So he's looking at it and he gets the idea from the Christmas story that, hey, I can be the ghost of Christmas present in the future because I can take this time machine to any point in his life. What's fascinating, though, is there's a whole other world that's created here because this sea of storms, there are fish flying around in this thing, including sharks. So one of the goals of young Kazran is he wants to see a shark. So there's a great kind of almost like Peter Pan kind of scene where Matt Smith and the young boy, and while this is happening, Gambon's memories are being affected. And he's got a videotape where Matt Smith is telling him, look, you're starting to remember. And he's starting to remember an alternate reality where he isn't this kind of person, where he's had joy in his life. But it doesn't stop there. It goes in all these different, fascinating, time-bending directions. It's really a thoughtful, fun, and an affecting episode. So I'd say I'd highly recommend it. Like, even if you're sitting here thinking, Doctor Who, I don't know. It's the Christmas episode. I'm not sure if it's still on Netflix. Maybe on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Not sure where you can find it, but great episode, worth watching. And you can totally, if you have to pay a couple bucks for it, it's totally worth it.
Nice.
And you can watch it on its own. Very well produced. To me, it's a Christmas classic. I put it up there with all the movies, Christmas movies that are out there. And it is very true to the spirit of Charles Dickens without just giving you Charles Dickens again. Sure. And there's a scene where a shark pulls a sled through the sleigh through the sky, so you get that.
Nice. Definitely worth checking out. So my number one, last one, Alf.
Alf? Remember Alf? Alf? Oh no. Yes. Yes, I do remember Alf. I remember Alf, but I don't remember any episodes of Alf.
So like so for those of you who are listening to this, that is ALF, Alf, voiced by Paul Fusco.
If it makes you feel better, you can think he's talking about Elf the movie.
Yeah. That's why I had to clarify. Yeah. So it ran for 4 seasons. The 4th season actually never really ended. It was left on a cliffhanger because
we weren't sure if Alf was going to eat the family or not. What will happen next?
But there was one Christmas special that they did. I believe it was in season 2. It was a longer one. I think it was a 2-hour episode that they did. And this is actually the one that I was talking about that takes...
I would have never figured it out.
The reality of what goes on. Because in this episode, there's a lot of goofy stuff that's going on. Willie's trying to take the family back to the cabin where it's more simple. You know, the childhood cabin that he grew up in where it's more simple. And you don't have all the comforts of life. And he's trying to give them a good old-fashioned Christmas. And, of course, Alf is just blowing things up and, you know, doing all sorts of craziness. Well, through a series of circumstances, Alf is taken into the city, into a hospital specifically, where he has the opportunity to don the Santa outfit and visit different people throughout the hospital.
Because that isn't going to scare the crud out of sick people.
Well, one of the older people he visits is blind, so they don't really know. And then he visits a bunch of children. One of the children that he meets is dying of cancer. And you get this really tender, heartfelt moment in this kind of silly...
With a Muppet.
But it's interesting because it really is effective. You know, Alf kind of really learns his lesson and he is, you know, brought to a place where he truly goes outside of himself to see someone in need and give to someone else. And I found myself surprisingly moved because the whole series is nothing like this. This is one of those ones where they go outside of their tone and it works.
He doesn't try to eat any cats in this.
He doesn't try to eat any cats in this. Or maybe he does, but
he learns that maybe it's okay to not eat the cat.
That's right. But, you know, the interaction he has with this little girl who has cancer is just very touching and moving. And Paul Fusco does a great job of acting out through Elf the emotions, and the little girl, I believe her name is Katie. Katie's the mother, so maybe it's not Katie. But anyway, the interaction that the two of them have are very special and unique. And it's, you know, she has coming to grips with the fact that she is going to die. And Alf is coming to grips with that as well. And it just makes for a fantastic Christmas episode. And it's one of my favorites that I watch every single year without fail.
That's impressive. Now, is Alf, I mean, is this a case, is it out there anywhere on...
I have the DVD, so I actually have this on DVD where I watch it.
I'm not sure if it might be out on Hulu.
It could be.
But probably you might be able to find it on YouTube.
YouTube is
the probably first place to go for it.
Yep.
So, Alf did not see that coming. And there's tons of other ones that I'm sure that we've missed that... Probably even this year there have been or starting to be decent episodes. That's pretty... I mean, we went a bit long on this.
We did. But it's, you know, this is our Christmas special from
that's
us
right.
to you.
That's very true. So, you know, didn't talk too much about TV specials, but maybe we can hit some of that up next time.
Sure.
And...
Yeah, I think we're ready to rock and roll, dude. I mean, yes. I don't know what else we can say.
Yeah, we're going to be back with another Christmas episode, another Christmas themed episode. Maybe two.
Yeah, maybe two.
And see what happens. Then we're also be looking to bring you. We're gonna do Star Wars.
Yes,
we commit to bringing you Star Wars. It may be.
Yes.
It might be a little bit beyond.
Beyond
the release date, but we are gonna bring you a review of Star Wars, and we are also gonna do the end of the year. So I will have that stuff up next week. And enjoy the Christmas season, everyone.
Ho ho ho.